I call this meeting of House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it's 1:32 p.m. February 13th, 2023. With us today, we have Representative Colom, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, co-chair Foster, and myself, co-chair Johnson. We have our moderator, Emma Turner from the LIO, our finance secretary, Leah Frazier. Thank you for being with us today. I'd also make note that my staff, Ramon Henderson, is here. Thank you for being here in the finance meeting. Today we have a presentation, and it's an overview from the Department of Family and Community Services. Presenting today, we have Marion Sweet, the Assistant Commissioner. Ms. Sweet, would you like to come forward, place yourself on the record, and if you would like to introduce or if you have any additional presenters with you, please feel free to introduce them and bring them forward as well.
All right. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Marion Sweet. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department. Not close enough. Sorry. I am the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Family and Community Services. I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to present our department overview budget with you today. I am here to do a budget presentation. I don't have any additional members from the department that will be presenting today. The policy team is actually not available today at another meeting.
Well, very good. So seeing no starting questions from the committee, go ahead and get started. Thanks.
All right. The mission of the Department of Family and Community Services is to provide support, safety, and personal well-being for vulnerable Alaskans. And we're able to accomplish this through a vision of service first. The Department of Family and Community Services has four 24/7 direct service divisions and the Departmental Support Services Division as well. We have a budget of just under $460 million for fiscal year 2024. Seen here on the screen, we have a department organizational chart. It lists our divisions, our leadership, and specific in the commissioner's office, some of our key focus areas.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Ms. Sweet, there's just a couple of acronyms used on that last slide, DES/DET services. Could you just tell me what those stand for, please?
Most definitely. Through the chair, Rep. Hannon, DES is Designated Evaluation and Stabilization, and DET is Designated Evaluation and Treatment. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Executive Order 121 reorganized the Department of Health and Social Services into two new agencies, the Department of Family and Community Services and the Department of Health. The Alaska Pioneer Homes, the Office of Children's Services, the Division of Juvenile Justice, and the Alaska Psychiatric Institute are four direct service 24/7 divisions make up the Department of Family and Community Services, and the Commissioner's Office and Finance and Management Service provide operational support. The Department of Family and Community Services is the third largest department in the state in the number of positions, with 1,854 full-time permanent positions. where each of our four direct service divisions were able to transition completely from the Department of Health and Social Services into the Department of Family and Community Services. Departmental Support Services, which includes the Commissioner's Office, and Finance and Management Services, which consists of Human Resources, Procurement, Information Technology, Finance, Facilities, and Grants, was split between the two new agencies. Because of that, we don't have a clean way of showing Departmental Support Services fiscal year 2022 expenditures. So for the purpose of this slide, I will be presenting a department overview budget that just includes the four direct services divisions. However, I do have a slide specifically for departmental support services just a little bit further in this presentation. I'd like to note that the difference between the fiscal year 23 management plan budget and the fiscal year 2024 proposed budget is an increase of 1.7% or just over $6.3 million. I will be going over what makes up those increases in the upcoming division slides, but here I'd like to take a moment to talk about the difference between the fiscal year 22 actuals and the 2024 proposed budget. At first glance, it might look like a large difference between these fiscal years, but it can really be explained in just a few items. First, personal services plays a role in two ways. In fiscal year 2022, the department had a large or high vacancies across all of our divisions, which reduced the overall personal services expenditures in that fiscal year. And then second, in management or in fiscal year 23 and in fiscal year 24, personal services saw increases in salary and benefit adjustments. We also have the Alaska Pioneer Homes where the payment assistance program lives. This component is made up of UGF funding and is paid to the Pioneer Homes operations through a reimbursable service agreement and recorded as interagency receipts. Because the amount of payment assistance funding is dependent on the actual elders in the homes, the amount of unspent authority is seen in both the UGF funding source as well as the interagency funding source. So it's basically doubled. At the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, we received a higher than normal allotment of disproportionate share hospital or DSH funding, which increased our expenditures in the IA category. Reducing the amount of expenditures that we posted to statutory designated program receipts, or SDPR. SDPR in the Psychiatric Institute is where we record our private pay and our insurance collections. We were able to take the excess collections and statutory designated program receipts and carry those forward from fiscal year 2022 into fiscal year 23. However, the result was a higher than normal lapse in STPR funding in fiscal year 2022. Now, both interagency
We can finish this. Okay. Wait until we get to the end of the slide.
All right. Both interagency receipts and statutory designated program receipts show in the other category on this slide, which is where you can see is the majority of the differences between these two fiscal years.
All right. Representative Hanner.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Ms. Sweet, I need to rewind a little bit and go back to the Pioneer Home Payment Assistance. And you said it shows as a DGF. And I'm just trying to track where it's coming from. So is that coming from another agency and in as DGF?
Thank you for the question to the chair. Representative Hannon, they're both components within the Alaska Pioneer Homes. We have a component that is for payment assistance and a component that is for the operations of the homes themselves. And so we actually have the RSA from our payment assistance component to supply the difference in what our elders are able to pay to reside inside of the homes and what the actual cost of the homes are.
Follow up? Chair Johnson.
Follow up?
And so Ms. Sweet, it is showing as a DGF expense, but it's also part of the UGF allocation?
Yes, because in the payment, through the chair, the payment assistance program is funded with UGF funding, and then we pay that through an RSA, and in the operations, it's recorded as interagency. So it is recorded as an expense of UGF as well as an expense of interagency, and unspent funds are lapsed in both funding sources.
One more follow-up?
Yeah. Follow-up, Representative Hannon.
So I can't see on this bar graph, and it perhaps is a homework for an answer back. What I'm interested in is figuring out whether our payment assistance has gone up in the last three fiscal years or stayed fairly steady as we implemented a new pay structure for Pioneer Home residents. And since this double books them for accounting purposes, I can't really ask you any more questions that give me that answer. So that's really what the question is that I'm trying to figure out, is whether we've had an increase in relation to as we've changed it or whether it's stagnant and, you know, the goal in changing our monthly payment was to make sure that any residents who were there were not removed because they couldn't pay. And there had been some speculation that we were going to see a steep increase in the number of residents who are going to need payment assistance. And as you're saying, we really couldn't tell by the data because it's given in UGF and whether it's used or not. And then you said in both cases, some of it's lapsing. So that would immediately conclude we're not chasing anybody else out, but I'm just, whether we've seen a steep increase in the need for the payment assistance. Thank you.
Did you want to respond?
Thank you. Through the chair, we can definitely get the amount of payment assistance over the last several years. And again, it is completely dependent on the elders that are in the homes at the time, so it does fluctuate. But we would be happy to get that information for you.
All right. Thank you. And then we have Representative Stapp, and then followed by Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Deputy Commissioner Sweet. Just quick point of clarification for me regarding the other category of funding. I am tracking mentally that is basically private payer program receipts and potentially interagency receipts. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up.
Is there a potential way I could get a breakdown of how large of the increase is driven by, say, private payer or enhanced reimbursement rates and that type of stuff? Is that, obviously, it's a $25 million jump from FY22 actuals to the 23-24 plan. So I'm curious kind of what the big kind of driver behind that additional source of revenue actually is, if that makes sense.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, that definitely makes sense, and we can certainly provide you with the details on what makes up the other increases and decreases in funding.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Sweet, but when we talk about interagency receipts in this context, I'm assuming it's the Department of Health. Is that the sister agency from which most of the receipts would be coming?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, for the Alaska Pioneer Homes, it's actually within the Department of Family and Community Services. The division itself has a component that is dedicated for, The Pioneer Homes has a component that is dedicated for payment assistance that provides an RSA to the homes operations. And so it's within the Pioneer Homes itself. The funding in the Pioneer Homes Payment Assistance Program provides funding directly to the home's operations for those elders in care that cannot make the payments completely themselves.
Follow-up?
Okay, so you've got an office housed in DFCS, but I guess where I was going was I assume a lot of these dollars are Medicaid dollars, and they originate there, and then make their way to your department?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, the Pioneer Homes and API both receive Medicaid, and it is treated as interagency receipts. And in that instance, yes, those do come from the Department of Health through the Medicaid program.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
One more thing that, through the chair, or I'm sorry, I'm supposed to say, for the record, Marion Sweet. The last difference, or the last item that plays in that difference, is in fiscal year 2023. Through the People's First appropriation, we received a $10 million increment into the base budget for the Office of Children's Services. So, so while we have a large difference between fiscal year 2022 actuals and fiscal year 24 budget, it's really explained in our unspent other category, which is our IA and our statutory designated program receipts. It's explained inside of our unspent personal services due to vacancies, and then also the increase from the People's First Initiative into the OCS-based budget. As we move into the division slides, you will see there will be increases on all. Those are directly related to salary and benefit adjustments. However, I'm not going to be focusing on those for the purpose of this presentation. I'd like to focus on the new budget changes between fiscal year 2023 and 2024's proposed budget. Departmental Support Services has 68 full-time permanent positions that support the operations of our direct services divisions with a budget of $17.9 million. I want to remind you that for the purpose of this slide, because Departmental Support Services was split between the two new agencies, I don't have fiscal year 2022 data to compare to 2024. One thing of note here on Departmental Support Services was a transfer of a health program manager from inpatient mental health into the commissioner's office to provide departmental oversight of the designated evaluation and treatment program. Another item that's significant, although maybe not so much in funding, but in the actual critical need, is the increase to the complex care coordination unit. Also within our commissioner's office, we are requesting three new positions, a deputy director to oversee operations, another care coordinator position, as well as a social services associate position. The Alaska Mental Health Trust is supportive of this and is put forward a budget request for Mental Health Trust Authority in the amount of $150,000 for this unit, and the remaining balance is $324,000 and is spread between federal, UGF, and interagency receipts. The Alaska Pioneer Homes has 422 full-time permanent positions and serves six homes across the state with a budget of $107.2 million. The Alaska Pioneer Homes provides services including assistance with activities of daily living, nursing services, recreational and social programs, assistance with medications, dietary needs, housekeeping, and meal preparation. The homes provide for five levels of care, with level one being the most independent, going up to level five for those living with dementia or other complex care needs.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Through the chair, Deputy Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner, Ms. Sweet, I wanted to know if you could chat with me a little bit about the vacancies. I'm seeing 422 full position, full-time. I had a few gentlemen come through my office sharing with me their concerns around doing multiple levels of care that they haven't been trained for, and I just wanted to know more about how it's looking and whether, I guess through the numbers, you would share that you have some vacancies. Could you give me any sense of, other than the dollars that are carried over, what that's looking like for the Pioneer Homes care?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I do have those numbers. I have the most recent vacancy, the most recent vacancy report for the Pioneer Homes is currently recording us at a 14.5% vacancy, with 63 of our total positions vacant, and that was at the end of December. as far as how those vacancies relate to the levels of care that we have, the Alaska Pioneer Homes will be presenting in a couple of weeks, and we can make sure that we include that inside of our conversation.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry. Was that a follow-up? I know we have a question from Representative Ortiz, followed by Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a follow-up on Representative Galvin's question. In regards to the vacancies at the Pioneer Homes, is there statistics that show how, perhaps, I'm asking, are there cases of empty beds, not because of lack of demand, but because of lack of people to serve the residents, so therefore they keep the beds empty because there's nobody there to actually serve their needs?
The Chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't have that answer, but we can make sure that we have that prepped and ready for our meeting in 2 weeks with this group.
Thank you.
And I just would like to follow up on that. I would like to see those numbers when they come before us to talk about rooms that are vacant, even though there's a need, and why they are. Thank you. Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair. How much revenue is brought back into the Pioneer Home? And you can get back. I mean, you don't have to answer right now if you don't have it. I mean, I'm just interested.
Through the Chair, Representative Kronk, the next slide actually is the budget, and we will be talking about the revenue. I do want to, if I can, please just go back. We do have occupancy statistics for each of our homes, and I'm happy to share that. We're actually very, very high, I would think, inside of our occupancy. The average is 93.6, and that's across all of our homes. The highest being 97.4, down to the lowest, which is the Anchorage Pioneer Homes at 81.9. Now, the Anchorage Pioneer Homes itself is not that, the occupancy is that low because we have had to strategically hold rooms vacant because we're doing a number of remodel items at the Pioneer Homes in Anchorage, including fire safety updates in order to get the correct certification for the home. Okay. Within the Alaska Pioneer Homes, we processed a minor fund switch between UGF funding and statutory designated program receipts due to an increase in pharmacy collections. The other item of note is within the designated general fund section, or DGF funding, and it is impacted in two ways. First, in the fiscal year 2024 budget request, we have added an increase in general fund program receipts in the amount of $1.25 million. This is to allow us to be able to expend collected receipts so that we can reinvest back in the homes for goods needed at them. So this would be for things like kitchenware or even furniture items like beds within the homes. The second item of note within general fund program receipts was that on January 1st of 2023, the Social Security Administration benefit rate increase went into effect, and the Alaska Pioneer Homes rates are directly tied to the Social Security Administration benefit rates, and therefore our rates increased as well. So we put forward, and you'll see the little blue box on the right side of this slide, is the request that we put forward in the fiscal year 2023 supplemental bill to increase our program receipt authority to allow us to be able to spend those anticipated increases in collections. And if I may, just to Representative Kronk, you can see that the combination of other and, which is IA and collections for the Pioneer Homes, was $38.6 million in 2022. Inpatient mental health has a total budget of,
Madam Chair.
Sorry, Representative Colon.
Sorry. Thank you. Through the chair. So I was just back to the Pioneer Home just for a second. So in the legislative overview of the budget, there's in there, it's asking for 1.25 million in DGF because the Pioneer Homes have a high had a consistent high capacity is what it's saying, is that it's you need linens, kitchenware, beds. So is that 1.2, does that have anything to do with the renovations going on, or is this just saying that the capacity is high so we're going through supplies faster?
Through the chair, Representative Colom, we have had high occupancy within the homes and have had actually increased insurance and private pay that exceeds the amount of authority that we have in that funding source. So while we would love to be able to provide those things to the homes, we can't expend because our authority is limited. We have more collections that are coming in than the authority allows. So we're increasing to allow us to be able to reinvest those funds back into the home.
Okay, I got it. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Inpatient mental health has a total budget of $75.2 million. The inpatient mental health RDU is comprised of designated evaluation and treatment, DET, and the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. But for the purposes of explaining the changes in the operating budget, I'm going to go to the next slide and go and talk about each of these individually. So designated evaluation and treatment was transferred to the department from the Division of Behavioral Health through Executive Order 121. The increase that you see here is a result of the second year of expanded funding from House Bill 172. And while that increase was $904,000 for year two's worth, for year two's funding, remember the position, the health program manager position to manage this program was transferred from DET or Designated Evaluation and Treatment up to the commissioner's office because we needed to have department-wide oversight of this program. So the remaining funding that you see here is $525,000 in UGF and $150,000 in interagency receipts, and those are specific for the following programs: Designated Evaluation and Stabilization, DES, Designated Evaluation and Treatment, DET, the Disproportionate Share Hospital, or DISH, funding, as well as our secure transport agreements.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Johnson. Ms. Sweet, FY22 shows us a big chunk of federal money, and then 23 and 24 show us no federal money. That doesn't make sense to me, so can you just help me understand why we don't have federal money for 23 and 24?
That is an excellent question. Through the chair, Representative Hannon. When we were part of the Department of Health and Social Services, we managed this program and were able to claim directly to the Medicaid program because we were all part of the same department. We had to in 23 when the position or this unit was transferred to the Department of Family and Community Services. In order for us to be able to hit Medicaid, we had to move that from a federal source into IA. So you'll see that the shift and the increase that goes associated with it from 22 of $4.5 million, it was 4.65 in management plan for 23 under interagency receipts, and then increased again for those agreements inside of fiscal year 24's request.
So quick follow-up translating.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Hannon, then Representative Stapp, followed by Representative Josephson.
So it's still federal money, but it's now an interagency, so it's not showing as federal. It's showing as other, but it's the same amount of money, and we're still getting it for those same individuals, but it's no longer, for accounting purposes, called federal money. It's interagency receipts. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, you've got it. You nailed it.
Representative Stout.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Deputy Commissioner Sweet. So in the spirit of bipartisanship, I would like to request in the future, could you please break out interagency federal receipts from other funding as so we don't get the funding sources mixed up in our mind, because it's also really confusing to me to try to track what should be basically federal Medicaid dollars. So add an additional bar on the bar graph, if you could, please. Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, we would be happy to.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, the DET program is essentially like a classification that means someone gets an API equivalent at a smaller Alaska hospital. Is that what DET is?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, with not having any policy people here at the moment, I'm going to the DET program includes the portion of funding that goes to our DISH hospitals, of which API is one, and then there's designated evaluation and stabilization, as well as designated evaluation and treatment programs that fund hospitals that provide treatment services or stabilization services. And yes, they are in support of the mental health, I almost said curriculum, and that's not correct, to help support those needs outside of having people go to API. Yes.
That's it. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Moving on.
The Alaska Psychiatric Institute has 326 full-time permanent positions and a budget of $60 million and is the only full-service psychiatric hospital in the state of Alaska. The Alaska Psychiatric Institute has a maximum capacity of 80 licensed beds. 60 of those are in the adult civil unit, 10 are in our adolescent unit, and 10 of those are in our forensic competency restoration unit. Two new programs are being proposed in fiscal year 2024 to help the number of Alaskans that are charged with a crime restore to forensic competency. And this is the outpatient as well as the jail-based competency restoration programs. The fiscal year 2024 budget request includes four new full-time positions and one part-time position to stand up these much-needed programs. We are working on finding a location in Anchorage and solidifying a lease for our outpatient restoration program. And then we're continuing our collaboration with the Department of Corrections on the jail-based competency restoration program. The increase that we're putting forward is $800,000 in UGF.
All right, and does there any monies come from the Department of Corrections? I mean, is any of this in the Department of Corrections budget?
To the chair, the program, the restoration services will be provided by Alaska Psychiatric Institute staff, but they will be traveling on site to corrections for those that are in jail. So there is costs for the corrections in that the individuals receiving care are in the jail system themselves. But that, I can't answer anything else on their budget.
What about the inpatients that are there because they're, you know, have committed a criminal act, but they're in, you know, through the court system, they're in API. Is that corrections at all, or how does that get paid for, I guess?
To the chair, they are in our care, so the Alaska Psychiatric Institute helps get them to competency so that they can go through trial, so they aren't in DOC's custody at that point. And then the jail-based restoration program would be for those who are in jail and are waiting trial, and then the outpatient is for those that are on lesser crimes or out on bail.
And then what about those that have been, that are there, that have post-trial, that are not probably not going to get out? I know there's some people at API like that.
To the chair, yes, and I would need somebody from the Psychiatric Institute themselves to be able to speak specific to those cases. I don't have that information.
I guess what I'm trying to get to is, does corrections pay for those post-trial? I don't know, it's not called an incarceration, I guess, but how is it? I'd like to know how that was paid for.
To the chair, we will get something followed up in writing for you on that.
Very good, thank you. Okay. Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, this week, the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, $60 million for your FY24 budget for 326 full-time positions. That's roughly $185,000 per position. Can I get a list of the top 10 positions and compensation of those?
Through the chair, most definitely. We will get you that list.
Thank you.
Representative Plum.
Through the chair, I didn't see any mental health trust receipts on this. Is the mental health trust contributing to this program in any way?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb, we do not have Alaska Mental Health Trust authority coming in for these two specific programs.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Sweet, I know this may not be in your wheelhouse, but you talked about competency to stand trial, and under Title 47, the civil commitment. Does this new department know what's happening in the courtroom when someone has been found unrestorable and incompetent to stand trial? Do you share? I've been working intensely on a bill that will be filed soon, and Senator Klayman has a bill on this topic, and I guess I'm wondering whether the Department of Law and DFCS talk to one another about that gap.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the department does, this girl doesn't. And yes, we have a full-time position who is the DETDES coordinator, and she is she has her hands directly involved in all of the Title 47 cases.
Okay, thank you.
All The Office of Children's Services has 614 full-time positions who work to strengthen families, ensure safety, achieve permanency, and to promote overall well-being of children. There are 21 offices across 5 regions in the state, and they have an overall budget of $195 million.
Do we have the vacancy rate for just OCS?
To the chair, I do have the vacancy rate just for OCS. At the end of December, the vacancy rate for the entire division was just under 22%. I do not have it broken out, but I would be happy to provide that to you in writing, what it is for our direct frontline social workers. It's a little bit higher than that for them.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
On this topic, Ms. Sweet, the subcommittee that I used to chair in FY22 believed that the employment crisis was so severe at OCS that members should get retention, not members, but the workers should get retention bonuses. The governor vetoed those bonuses, and then in FY23 had a plan for his own bonuses. Can you tell us how that plan has worked?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I would be happy to. We've been partnering with our sister agency, the Department of Administration, on getting letters of agreement finalized and approved by both unions. That would be the general bargaining agreement as well as the supervisory agreement. We are, I would say, in the 11th hour of getting those final and approved so that we can actually implement those to our staff. And of note, and Director Gui will be discussing this in further detail when she does her presentation later this week. We have, for the first time, and I think that it might be because that is known to the public, seen a decrease in the turnover of our frontline staff.
Follow up.
The other thing the subcommittee did 2 years ago, and I don't remember if the governor adopted this, but what we were told by your predecessor was that the workers at OCS, so it wasn't really, it was Ms. Gui, really, or Gui, or Kent, Gui, that the workers were changed by their work, so that they were, I don't want to over-dramatize it, but they were effectively damaged themselves by working at OCS. And so we had funded a clinician or a psychologist for them. Did something like that ever get provided to the OCS social workers?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, mental health clinician 3 position was created for that exact purpose, to help with the trauma that our staff endure on a daily basis.
Great news. Thank you.
Thank you.
There we go.
Okay.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Chair Johnson. Assistant Commissioner Sweet, I'm curious to know, I'm looking at 22% vacancy rate, yes, and potentially it was higher before. So I know it doesn't exactly calculate, but that's a lot of money unspent, and presumably then a lot of care not able to be given due to that. I haven't looked at what specifically is being done, but I would be curious to know if there are plans to, in addition to retention bonuses and working with a psychologist, how we can help to make sure that we're able to spend the dollars that are meant to help these families.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I think the department appreciates that very, very much. And Director Gui will be presenting on the 16th, and we'll be able to talk about some of the other things that the department or the division is doing to help with morale. As Representative Josephson mentioned, it's a very difficult job, as well as training programs and partnerships with universities for internships, all of the different things that they're doing. But I'll let her present on those things, since she knows her division much better than I. Right. There are two things to note in the Office of Children's Services for the fiscal year 24 governor's proposed budget. One is a new program to assist with foster children, foster youth aging out of the system. It's a $385,000 increase, of which $235,000 is being supplied by the Mental Health Trust Authority, and $150,000 is included in our request of UGF. This program is going to partner with our existing independent living program within OCS to provide expanded services to those youth. The other item is a fund source change from general funds to general fund match to accurately reflect the state's share to our federal spending. So both general fund and general fund match follow under the UGF category. So for all purposes, it's a net zero, but it is a significant dollar amount. So I wanted to call it out for this group. The Division of Juvenile Justice has 424 full-time permanent positions, 6 facilities, and 13 probation offices across the state, and a budget of $62.1 million. The division uses a restorative justice approach with the youth in our care. And what that means is that we focus on rehabilitation of the youth offenders to the victims and their communities. Okay. There are no significant changes in the Division of Juvenile Justice budget. The increases that you see here are strictly related to the salary and benefit adjustments in UGF, in other, which is IA, and then also within our federal programs. So the Department of Family and Community Services 24 proposed budget had a number of technical changes, the House Bill 172, and then the majority of which are salary and benefit increases. There are really only 4 new budget items. It's the increase in general fund program receipts for the Pioneer Homes to allow us to reinvest those collected funds back into the homes themselves. It's the funding and the positions within API for those 2 much needed competency restoration programs. It's also for the complex care coordination unit within the commissioner's office, so that we can help support the increase in Alaskans that are presenting with complex acuity needs. And then it's the increase to our foster youth that are aging out of the system. The total amount of just UGF funding for these 4 new budget items is $1.1 million. And that's my conclusion. I wanted to thank you again for allowing me to come before you and present the Department of Family and Community Services fiscal year 2024 operating budget.
All right, Representative Stapp, followed by Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Deputy Commissioner Sweet. Thank you so much for your presentation. Just a quick question for me. Because of the nature and kind of other revenues, right, that we discussed earlier, I am curious, in my mind, the federal receipts from Medicaid should be fairly consistent. However, the private payer from individuals who would have, say, long-term care insurance, something that may not be consistent. So in the event that those revenues that you're requesting the additional program receipt authority do not materialize, does that create a potential liability for the state to have to pay for a year from now through the supplemental process if that money doesn't actually materialize? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Stepp, within the Pioneer Homes, that is the intent of the payment assistance program. So while we have the increase in receipts now because of private pay and insurance collections, You're very correct. We might not in the future. We might also. But the payment assistance program is there to help support that. So if we do have a reduced amount of collections in future years, that will be supported through the payment assistance program.
All right. Thank you. And we have a question from Coach Richmond. So go ahead.
It was just, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It was just a quick follow-up on the earlier question about grants from the Mental Health Trust Authority. We had a presentation from them a week ago, and among the proposed FY24 grants is $772,000 in grants to your agency. Just thought I might give you an opportunity to maybe expand on that.
Through the Chair, Representative Edgemond, I touched on the new funding items for fiscal year 2024. There are a number in the Mental Health Trust that were continuations from prior years that I didn't specifically address. I'm happy to get that information in writing to you because I don't have it in my binder right now.
Oh. Yeah, that would be much appreciated. I guess I was just trying to get maybe like a ballpark response. Where does the bulk of this nearly $800,000 go to? Is it, it's not API, if I heard things correctly just a bit ago. It's to other areas of the department?
Through the Chair, Representative Edgemond, what comes to mind is some that are going in from prior years into the Office of Children's Services. So I think that it's a combination of funding that's coming in for the Office of Children's Services, as well as departmental support services, specifically within the Commissioner's Office.
Yeah, just a concluding comment would be, if we could get a breakdown of that, I think that might be helpful to the committee. Thank you.
Through the Chair, most definitely.
All right, and following Representative Edgemond, we have Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Ms. Sweet, the Division of Juvenile Justice bar graph caught me a little off guard in that there's so little federal money in there. And my presumption is that many of those children that OCS encounters, some of those end up in juvenile justice. And I'm curious, as you know, when they're Medicaid eligible, Medicare covered, but there's very little federal money in this component. And so I'm curious as to whether it's you know, if they end up in a prison, if an adult ends up in a prison, then Medicare and Medicaid stop the day they enter there, and only if they're hospitalized did it have coverage. But we have six facilities with kids in them, and I guess I was just expecting there to be a lot more federal money there. So could you tell me what I'm missing in that equation?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, the federal grants that we have within the Division of Juvenile Justice come from the Department of Justice. We have reentry program. We have a Title II formula grant that comes in. Though they are small, the youth that are in our care receive medical coverage from the Division of Juvenile Justice unless they are admitted into a hospital and are there for longer than 24 hours, in which case then they are covered under Medicaid.
Quick follow-up, which is, so I'm going to translate it to my understanding. So similar to adult prisons, even if they had Medicaid coverage on the outside before being incarcerated in a juvenile facility, once inside or sentenced into a juvenile facility, the federal reimbursement for any care is suspended.
Through the Chair, yes.
Thank you.
All right, we had any other questions? I wanted to make sure we had a few questions from the committee that we asked for responses of front two. And I wanted to, we asked for a breakdown of the Mental Health Trust budget and the services it provides. Pioneer home vacancies and why. Mm-hmm. How many long-term post-corrections inmates do we have at API, and does Department of Corrections pay for anything on those inmates? And there may be more. Does anyone else at the committee have, did anyone else at the committee have questions that we want to make sure we get our responses back for? All right. Okay, well, seeing.
I have a question. I'm not sure you can answer this, but through the chair. So this office is, Office of Complex Placement and Coordination Unit, and you want three more people in that. What's the goal of this unit?
Through the chair, Representative Cologne. So right now we have a number of not only youth but adult that are presenting to us that don't have a good place to go. And we're struggling, and I know that one of the first things that my commissioner had on her very first day was one of these calls where we had a youth that came into our care that didn't meet the Alaska Psychiatric Institute couldn't meet their needs. There was no other facilities in the state that could meet their needs. And so the call ended up lasting the entire weekend, multiple calls through the entire weekend, while members from our department, the Department of Health, community partners, were all trying to find where they could place this youth. And it's increasing. These conversations, these meetings that we're having with our partner agencies and with our sister department, Department of Health, are happening more and more frequently. And we are creating a complex care unit within our commissioner's office to be the sole place to go for those complex placements. We're going to be working with partners in state to try to increase their capacity for being able to take both youth and adults that are presenting with these complex high acuity needs. We're working with partners out of state to find out what services they provide so that if we are unable to find a place in Alaska, that we can find someplace out of state for that individual to get their needs. And really the focus of this unit is how it's different than before is that we want to make sure that the program, that the placement that we find for that individual is based off of that individual's needs and not just where there's a hole that we can put them. And that goal of getting them the support that they need so that they can get back into the community and be successful youth or adults inside of Alaska. So that is the basis of that unit.
Can I have a follow-up? So how many people are we talking here? Like, is there a cycle of... So it sounds like is they're actually finding a place for people to be actually to go. So I guess I'm struggling with that just because I feel like the Department of Health, that's one of the jobs like that you guys navigate people on where to go all the time. And so I'm trying to figure out why this is different.
Through the chair, Representative Klum, we are working with the Department of Health. It's a partnership, really. We are looking at it from the individual standpoint and creating a database of providers and services that are out there. We're working with the Department of Health on licensing and expanded service in existing facilities. So it's really a partnership with the Department of Health on this. And right now we, in order to stand up in 23, we have taken an existing position within our agency and created a complex care coordinator and actually hired our first person into that. And we've actually have group meetings with the Department of Health as well as partners in the communities quite frequently on how we can create this entire kind of plan. Collaborative plan between us and our partners in the community.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
I wanted to make note of one additional question I had a note on. I believe it was Representative Staff had a question and asked for a response on a certain group, which I don't have written down, but why increase so much as far as the enhanced payer, private payer, and so on. And I have just a note to self that you would respond, so I want to make sure that you had made note of that. All right, so we're getting ready to wrap up here, but it looks like we have one more question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my question is actually for you versus the agency, but I know over on the other body in their finance committee, they had a presentation on the litigation from the Department of Justice and this suing the state over not able to meet our most complex adolescent and children's needs in this area that I presume are kind of the cases in the complex care. I have not looked through that entire tape nor read the entire Department of Justice conclusions, but I presume it directs the state to come up with some facilities and services that have high sticker price. And I am wondering if we're going to have a briefing on that same litigation, because I understand, you know, the agency's kind of stuck with, they take directives from us and from the executive branch, and they perhaps don't read that litigation and say, here's what we're going to do with it. But I don't know if we're going to hear that.
So right now we've been, thank you for that question. Right now we've been trying to sit through the subcommittees and address generally the higher level funding overview. We may, we'll put that on a to be considered list. And I appreciate the thought there.
Thank you. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, we're the body doing the work, and over on that other body, they may have the systems of leisure from the ivory tower of the solution is a few billion and a few facilities, but we've got to figure out how to deliver those services and make sure that Alaskans' families' needs are being met. And probably can't do it this fiscal year, but we've been attempting for at least a decade, I think, is when that litigation started, and we continue to not meet the needs of the most complex cases of our children and families in Alaska. So I appreciate any time we can spend solving that.
Ready?
Madam Chair, I apologize.
Representative Josephson.
The Chair, Ms. Sweet, following up on Representative Hannon's question, is there linkage, and I think it would be commendable if there were, but between the complex care unit and the lawsuit or the Justice Department order that was just mentioned?
Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, in so much as that I think that the complex care unit is looking to make sure that we have those placements available, I would say yes. that is the intent of this unit, is to make sure that when the individual comes into our care, that we're making sure that they get the best needs that they can for their specific issues. So, yes, I would say that this complex care unit is helping to support that cause.
Representative Colon.
Through the Chair. So, this office isn't creating any space for care. This is a navigation point where you have partners and you know what facilities may have a bed or a program, but it's not actually creating new space, is it?
Through the Chair, Representative Colom, no, this is not creating new space. This is making sure that the state of Alaska and Department of Family and Community Services has a team built to help meet the individual needs of those that come into our care.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Very good. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we're all finished. Thank you, Ms. Sweet. And our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, Tuesday, February 14 at 1:30 p.m. We will receive an overview from the Department of Health. And for all of those that want to make note, that was the other part of the Department of Health and Health and Human Services. Presenting will be Heidi Hedberg, Commissioner Designee, and Josie Stern, Assistant Commissioner. With no further business before the committee at 2:35, we are adjourned.